In Cosmos, NS, 42-467, is a list of astronomers who reported unknown dark bodies that they had seen crossing the disk of the Sun. La Concha, Montevideo, November 5, 1789. Kaiser, Amsterdam, November 9, 1802. Fisher, Lisbon, May 5, 1832. Houzeau, Brussels, May 8, 1845. According to the Nautical Almanac, the planet Mercury did cross the disk of the Sun upon these dates. It is either that the Flammarions do so punish those who see the new and the undesired, or that astronomers do discover Saturn, and do not know Mercury when they see him, and that Buckle overlooked something when he wrote that only the science of history attracts inferior minds, often not fit even for clergymen. Whatever we think of Flammarion, we admire his deftness. But we shall have an English instance of the ways in which astronomy maintains itself and controls those who say that they see that which they should not see, which does seem beefy. One turns the not very attractive looking pages of the English Mechanic, 1893, casually, perhaps, at any rate in no expectations of sensations glaring at one, a sketch of such a botanico-pathologic monstrosity as a muskmelon with rows of bunions on it, English Mechanic, October 20, 1893. The reader is told, by Andrew Barclay, F.R.A.S., Kilmarnock, Scotland, that this enormity is the planet Jupiter, according to the speculum of his Gregorian telescope. In the next issue of the English Mechanic, Capt. Noble, F.R.A.S., writes, gently enough, that, if he had such a telescope, he would dispose of the optical parts for whatever they would bring, and would make a chimney cowl of the tube. English Mechanic, 1893-2-309. The planet Mars, by Andrew Barclay. A dark sphere, surrounded by a thick ring of lighter material, attached to it, another sphere, of half its diameter. A sketch as gross and repellent to a conventionalist as the museum freak, in whose body the head of his dangling twin is embedded, its dwarfed body lopping out from his side. There is a description by Mr. Barclay, according to whom the main body is red, and the protuberance blue. Capt. Noble. Preposterous. Last straw that breaks the camel's back. Mr. Barclay comes back with some new observations upon Jupiter's lumps, and then in the rest of the volume is not heard from again. One reads on, interested in quieter matters, and gradually forgets the controversy. English Mechanic, August 23, 1897. A Gallery of Monstrosities, Andrew Barclay, signing himself F.R.A.S., exhibiting. The planet Jupiter, six times encircled with lumps, afflicted Mars, with his partly embedded twin reduced in size, but still a distress to all properly trained observers, the planet Saturn, shaped like a mushroom with a ring around it. Capt. Noble. Mr. Barclay is not a fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society, and, were the game worth the candle, might be restrained by injunction from so describing himself. And upon page 362, of this volume of the English Mechanic, Capt. Noble calls the whole matter a pseudo-F.R.A.S.S. crazy hallucinations. Lists of the Fellows of the Royal Astronomical Society, from June, 1875, to June, 1896. Barclay, Andrew, Kilmarnock, Scotland, elected February 8, 1856. I cannot find the list for 1897 in the libraries. List for 1898. Andrew Barclay's name omitted. Thou shalt not see lumps on Jupiter. Every one of Barclay's observations has something to support it. All conventional representations of Jupiter show encirclements by strings of rotundities that we are told are cloud forms, but, in the Jour BAA, December, 1910, is published a paper by Dr. Downing, entitled Is Jupiter Humpy?, suggesting that various phenomena upon Jupiter agree with the idea that there are protuberances upon the planet. A common appearance, said to be an illusion, is Saturn as an oblong, if not mushroom-shaped, See any good index for observations upon the square-shouldered aspect of Saturn. In L. Astronomy, 1889-135, is a sketch of Mars, according to Fontana, in the year 1636, a sphere enclosed in a ring, in the center of the sphere a great protruding body, said, by Fontana, to have looked like a vast, black cone. But, whether this or that should amuse or enrage us, should be accepted or rejected, is not to me the crux, but Andrew Barclay's own opening words are that, through a conventional telescope, conventional appearances are seen, and that a telescope is tested by the conventionality of its disclosures, but that there may be new optical principles, or applications, that may be, to the eye and the present telescope, what once the conventional telescope was to the eye in times when scientists refused to look at the preposterous, enraging, impossible moons of Jupiter. In the English Mechanic, 33-327, is a letter from the astronomer, A. Stanley Williams. He had written previously upon double stars, their colors and magnitudes. Another astronomer, Herbert Sadler, had pointed out some errors. Mr. Williams acknowledges the errors, saying that some were his own, and that some were from Smyth's cycle of celestial objects. In the English Mechanic, 33-377, Sadler says that, earnestly, he would advise Williams not to use the new edition of Smyth's cycle, because, with the exception of Volume 40, Memoirs of the Royal Astronomical Society, a more disgracefully inaccurate catalogue of double stars had never been published. If, says one astronomer to the other astronomer, you have a copy of this miserable production, sell it for waste paper. It is crammed with the most stupid errors. A new character appears. He is George F. Chambers, FRAS, author of a long list of astronomical works, and a tract, entitled, Where Are You Going, Sunday? He, too, is earnest. In this early correspondence, nothing ulterior is apparent, and we suppose that it is in the cause of truth that he is so earnest. Says one astronomer that the other astronomer is evidently one of those self-sufficient young men, who are nothing, if not abusive. But can Mr. Sadler have so soon forgotten what was done to him, on a former occasion, after he had slandered Admiral Smith? Chambers challenges Sadler to publish a list of, say, 50 stupid errors in the book. He quotes the opinion of the Astronomer Royal, that the book was a work of sterling merit. Airy vs. Sadler, he says, which is it to be? We began not very promisingly. Few excitements seem to lurk in such a subject as double stars, their colors and magnitudes, but slander and abuse are livelier, and now enters curiosity, we'd like to know what was done to Herbert Sadler. Late in the year 1876, Herbert Sadler was elected a Fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society. In Monthly Notices, RAS, January, 1879, appears his first paper that was read to the Society, Notes on the Late Admiral Smyth's Cycle of Celestial Objects, Volume 2, known as the Bedford Catalogue. With no especial vehemence, at least according to our own standards of repression, Sadler expresses himself upon some extraordinary mistakes in this work. At the meeting of the Society, May 9, 1879, there was an attack upon Sadler, and it was led by Chambers, or conducted by Chambers, who cried out that Sadler had slandered a great astronomer, and demanded that Sadler should resign. In the report of this meeting, published in the Observatory, there is not a trace of anybody's endeavors to find out whether there were errors in this book or not. Chambers ignored everything but his accusation of slander, and demanded again that Sadler should resign. In Monthly Notices, 39-389, the Council of the Society published regrets that it had permitted publication of Sadler's paper, which was entirely unsupported by the citation of instances upon which his judgment was founded. We find that it was Mr. Chambers who had revised and published the new edition of Smyth's cycle. In the English Mechanic, Chambers challenged Sadler to publish, say, 50 stupid errors. See page 451, volume 33, English mechanic Sadler lists just 50 stupid errors. He says that he could have listed, not 50, but 250, not trivial, but of the grossest kind. He says that in one set of 167 observations, 117 were wrong. The English mechanic drops out of this comedy with the obvious title, but developments go on. Evidently withdrawing its regrets, the council permitted publication of a criticism of Chambers' edition of Smythe's Cycle, in monthly notices, 40-497, and the language in this criticism, by S. W. Burnham, was no less interpretable as slanderous than was Sadler's, that Smythe's data were either roughly approximate or grossly incorrect, and so constantly recurring that it was impossible to explain that they were ordinary errors of observation. Burnham lists 30 pages of errors. Following is a paper by E. B. Noble, who published 17 pages of instances in which, in his opinion, Mr. Burnham had been too severe. Knowing of no objection by Burnham to this reduction, we have left 13 pages of errors in one standard astronomical work, which may fairly be considered as representative of astronomical work in general, inasmuch as it was, in the opinion of the Astronomer Royal, a book of sterling merit. I think that now we have accomplished something. After this we should all get along more familiarly and agreeably together. 13 pages of errors in one standard astronomical work are reassuring, there is a likable fallibility here that should make for better relations. If the astronomers were what they think they are, we might as well make squeaks of disapproval against alpine summits. As to astronomers who calculate positions of planets of whom he was one, Newcomb, in Reminiscences of an Astronomer, says the men who have done it are therefore, in intellect, the select few of the human race and aristocracy above all others in the scale of being. We could never get along comfortably with such awful selectness as that. We are grateful to Mr. Sadler, in the cause of more comfortable relations.